That's what you are. That's what you all are, Miss Stein said. All of you young people who served in the war, you are a lost generation.
Welcome to the first season of our podcast that is dedicated to a single theme. And you might have guessed, this theme is the lost generation. More specifically, those expatriate American authors in Paris during the 1920s. And this season was put together by Mimi, who has a passion for this period and this literature.
So yeah, I particularly love this time period. I think the opulence, all those wild parties that are described in many books.
Yeah,
the fashion, the dresses that women wore at that time, I would have loved wearing those kind of dresses. It's the beginning of women's right. Like, we have the suffragette. Like, in the US, women were allowed to vote in 1920. I love many books that were published during that period. And yeah, so I loved it so much that I decided to do my master's dissertation on one of Fitzgerald's short stories entitled May Day, which is a really good one. I advise everyone to read it.
Okay, maybe let's start with defining what lost generation refers to.
Yes, so the term lost generation, it refers to the generation of individuals who came of age during or just after the First World War, particularly those who were deeply affected by the war, so who served during the war or who maybe lost somebody during the war, and its aftermath. So the phrase is often attributed to the American writer Gertrude Stein. She's the woman who I quoted at the beginning of the episode, who heard her French garage owner speak of his young employee, telling him that he was une génération perdue.
Okay, maybe tell us first about the main authors associated with this lost generation.
Yes, so it will be a surprise to, I think, no one that the majority of authors during this time period were men. So we have Ernest Hemingway, which I think is extremely famous. I'm guessing everyone already knows him. F. Scott Fitzgerald. We have T.S. Eliot, and Ezra Pound, who were poets. James Joyce, who has a particularly interesting story regarding Paris in his book that I will talk about a bit later. And John Dos Passos. We also have Gertrude Stein. So she is a bit special because she was considered more of a patron of the arts than an author. She contributed to many careers. She helped launch many careers, both in literature, but also in art. She launched Pablo Picasso's career.
Okay.
Yeah. Henri Matisse. She helped Hemingway a lot as well. So yeah, she was very important in Paris, in the Paris of this period.
Okay.
So those are the major writers of the time.
Mm-hmm. That's really interesting because I've heard, obviously, of all these names, but I didn't know that Gertrude Stein had this.
Yeah, she was very influential.
Yeah, I can see that. Well, I can't wait to learn more about her influence on all these people. What was the context and of the origins of this movement?
So, as I said before, the First World War had a huge impact on many of the writers from this generation. So, for example, Hemingway was an ambulance driver for the Red Cross in Italy. So, a bit of trivia about him in this time period. He didn't really see any combat to the point that he was a bit, I probably shouldn't say that about the war, bored, and that he wanted to find real combat. But what happened was that he was driving the ambulance to, I think it was cigarettes to people on the front line. And his car drove over a mine and he was injured. He got shrapnels, bits in his legs. And so he was injured. He spent, I think, quite a few months in a hospital in Italy where he fell in love with an American nurse who was helping the hospital. She was, I think, 8 or 10 years older than him. And so he wanted to marry her. And that was what was supposed to happen when they went back to the US. But She broke his heart and told him that he was basically still a child and that, of course, she was not going to marry him.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, it was a deep trauma for him.
Okay, especially as it seems that Hemingway was a bit special. Well, not special, but a bit particular that he was quite a hot character. Well, yeah. He was quite hot-tempered.
Yeah. Another interesting story about him and the war is that when he came back from the war, he gave this story that he was injured while saving lives. And apparently the more he told the story, the more heroic he became in this story.
So he really was the novelist in the making.
So another author who went to war was John Dos Passos, who was also an ambulance driver. Fitzgerald enlisted in the army, but he didn't see any combat. He didn't leave the US.
Okay.
So with the war came the literary response of the writers that turned to literature as a means of grappling with the trauma mm-hmm. and making sense of the post-war world.
Okay. So I guess that this context has an influence on the writing. Maybe there are key characteristics in their works.
Definitely, yes. So we have, in a lot of those writings, we have a sense of loss, aimlessness, like Gertrude Stein said. They have no purpose. They don't know what to do with themselves. And they are searching for meaning in their lives after the war. They are very disillusioned about the world. They feel a lot of angst, so it is reflected in their writing. They are questioning traditional values in their literary works. So as I said, the 1920s, you have a lot of new social norms, if I can say that. So the main themes of those books are the trauma of war, the lost feeling, we said lost generation, the exploration of new literary styles. Hemingway is known for very stripped down prose, very short sentences. His whole purpose as a writer was to find the true sentence. He kept looking for that.
It's funny because in Movable Feast, there's a passage when he is with somebody he knows, apparently a young writer. He doesn't give the name of the guy because he didn't become anyone of interest. And they argue.
When they are in the cafe?
In the cafe, yeah, because Hemingway's not happy. He was interrupted
while he was training.
Yeah,
scene.
He's so rude. He's so mean. And I love this passage because Hemingway tells the guy that, well, if he can't write, maybe he can become a critic. So I love that one. So the guy takes the position of the critic and tells Hemingway exactly what you said, that his style is too, well, it lacks flesh and so on. Yeah. So
it does get, you need to get used to it, I think. Well, for me,
I don't mind his style at all. I actually prefer that kind of style where the words are carefully chosen, even if they don't seem to be really specially selected. But I prefer it to a style that is a bit too wordy.
Yeah, okay.
So maybe Hemingway managed in the end to find a true sentence.
Yeah.
Okay, that's very interesting. I mean, I think I read Hemingway in a different light now. I mean, I think I will pay more attention to his sentences and maybe comparing what he writes with Fitzgerald's style, for example.
Oh, they have two very different styles.
Yeah, I'm going to pay attention to that. There's also some places, some groups of people that this Lost Generation writers belong to.
Yeah, so it's really interesting, and I think you can really feel it in A Movable Feast, that it is very much a community of American writers and artists. Funnily enough, they don't really hang out with French people. At least you don't really feel it in A Movable Feast. They very much stay between themselves.
Yeah, at least I think it's in the introduction or the preface that Hemingway says that he didn't write about everything that was in his life, and he kept a number of people that he really spent some time with out of his text.
Yeah.
But it's true that at least they, even if it's, I don't really know in real life whether they were keeping themselves to themselves or whether they were talking with French people, but at least it seems to be what they constructed, at least in their writing. You told me that there were significant places for all these authors.
Yes. First, I would like to talk about the cafes where artists and authors could meet to talk about their craft, to talk about their work, but also to work, to actually work. Hemingway spent a lot of time in cafes writing his first novel and his short stories. Then we have literary salons. They were a hub for intellectual exchanges, artistic collaboration, and incubation of new literary ideas. So there were two important salons in the 1920s in Paris. The first one was at Gertrude Stein home. So she lived with her partner, Alice. And it's interesting because it is mentioned in A Movable Feast that during those nights, Gertrude entertained the men and Alice entertained the wives, but they were very separate.
Yes, and Gertrude didn't speak to the wives.
No.
I think it's Hemingway's wife who tells him that, well, she doesn't know anything about Gertrude because she didn't talk to her at all.
She was not important enough. If you were not an artist, she didn't really want. Yeah. She wasn't that interested to talk to. So at those salons, you could find, like we just said, Ernest Hemingway, Fitzgerald, who came a bit later on in the scene. I think they arrived in Paris around 1924. Pablo Picasso, Henri Matisse, among other. She was known, like I said, she was very avant-garde. She had a lot of ideas about what literature and art should be in the 1920s after the war. And yeah, she helped launch many careers. And so during those salons, it was a way for you to make connections, but also you could bring your work to her and she would judge it and tell you what you should change, etc. And she also had a lot of, I think she had quite a few contacts in the world of edition. So you could give your work to her and she would pass it on to important people. So that's the first important salon. The second one was over at Shakespeare and Company.
Oh, the famous.
Yes. So Sylvia Beach, she was an American expatriate who arrived in Paris, I think, after the First World War. And she opened this bookstore, which is not, contrary to what I thought, still opened today. Because the Shakespeare and Co. that we know in Paris is actually a tribute to her own bookstore.
Okay, that I didn't know. I thought that it had just moved.
No.
And I thought that it had been kept open since Sylvia Beach's days, but it was not.
No, so she opened it in 1919 at one address and she moved it to Rue Odéon, where the plaque is today, in 1921. It closed in 1941 during the Second World War because at the beginning of the Second World War, a lot of American expatriates decided to leave Paris, but she wouldn't do it. She wanted to stay because she felt that she was Parisian and she didn't want to leave France. And in 1941, a German soldier came into the bookstore and wanted to buy the last edition of, I don't remember which book it was, but she refused to sell it to him. And so he threatened to close down the shop. So she decided to close it down herself. And then she was arrested, I think, a few months afterwards. She spent 6 months in a prison with other American expatriates. And when she left the prison, she was in poor health. And so the bookstore never opened again.
Well, that's another thing that I've learned here because I had no idea that that Sylvia Beach had been imprisoned first. And second, that some American expatriates in particular were imprisoned.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that either before doing some research for this podcast.
And do you have any idea why they were imprisoned?
I don't know. I don't think I read that. But yeah. Okay. So a bookshop was very important because she sold English books. Well, books in English because you had a lot of American expatriates. It was a way for them to read in their own language. She hosted regular literary evenings and readings. She had a whole system where you could borrow books. Mm-hmm. So you paid, it was like a library. You paid, I think, a fee and then you could borrow as many books as you wanted.
Yeah, and Hemingway was really happy to find so many interesting books in the store.
So she helped bring together both established and new authors. And she also helped launch one particular career because she helped publish Joyce's novel Ulysses.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's another new thing for me.
Yeah, I think he couldn't find any editor who would publish the book. And so she did it with him. I think they serialized it. I'm not sure about that. But I know that she helped him publish it. And I also read somewhere that he wasn't very grateful for that.
Mm.
So as we said, Hemingway was a regular at her bookshop.
So we owe a lot to Sylvia Beach.
Yeah, she was very important.
Helping Hemingway and providing all these authors with books to read and meetings and so on.
Yeah, I really love that it was women that were important and that helped launch so many careers.
Yeah,
that it was
instrumental in the careers of these great authors whose books we read. Well, this sounds so fascinating. I'm really looking forward to future conversations on this topic. Can you tell us what books would you recommend to read to really make the most of this season?
So the first book you should read is probably The Great Gatsby. We are going to do an episode on Jazz Age stories. So it will actually be the second episode. So this will be an important book. Then A Movable Feast. We talked a little bit about it in this episode. Then we'll do an episode on expatriate women writers. I thought it was important to focus an episode on women. And then we'll do the final episode. We'll see what's the legacy of the lost generation.
Wow, thank you so much for preparing this for us, and can't wait for the next episode. Hey, not so fast. Do you know what would help a lot? It's if you would leave a 5-star rating or even a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That would enable us to help other readers find their own favorites. That's it for today. Bye.